tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hey, 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 everybody. It's your girl, Carla Renata, a.k.a. the Curvy Film Critic. And I am coming to you today at Black Hollywood Live under less than stellar circumstances. We are in a situation where not only are we dealing with a pandemic, but Black people in particular are dealing with a pandemic within a pandemic, so to speak. So before I get on with the show, which is, includes some really great stuff, I have a few things I'd like to say or that I'd like to communicate. And I wrote them down so that I wouldn't ramble and get off track, as I often do. So having said that, here we go. Let me just say that in light of recent events, I'm exhausted. I know you're exhausted, but I, as a Black person and as a woman in America, I'm extremely exhausted. Riots occur here in America every time that people get fed up with what's going on here. And let me just take you through a little history lesson through the injustice and the gender equality and the racism in America that brought us to today. So in 1913, the day before Woodrow Wilson's inauguration, women took to the streets. Poor, rich, educated, non-educated, and they marched down Pennsylvania Avenue for the right to vote, which consequently didn't happen until 7 years later in 1920. And then 50 years later, more than 50 years later, it happened again, where we were marching for reproductive rights. Then in 1921, on this very day, for a whole 24 hours, some white people descended upon Greenwood, a successful Black economic hub in Tulsa, Oklahoma, otherwise known as Black Wall Street, and they burned it down to the ground. No one has ever been held responsible or accountable for that. Now we're gonna speed up to the 60s, where Black people in America in general are just fed up with the fact that we didn't have civil rights, basic civil human rights, like being able to go to a bathroom, eat in a restaurant, ride in public transportation, or drink from a water fountain, unless it said colored only. The 60s also saw us marching for inequality and justice yet again. Now fast forward to the 90s, where we marched on behalf of apartheid, for the same injustices that were being done there were being done here less than 30 years prior to that. And just a few years ago, I myself marched in a march right here in Hollywood, California, to show my support and solidarity when Eric Garner was murdered and his last words uttered were, "I can't breathe," which brings us right to today, where yet again, we as Black people are fed up. And once again, we heard one more Black man yelling, "I can't breathe," and then yelling out for his mother, who is no longer on this earth. And that man was George Floyd. So what I want to say about all of that is, you got to know your history and you got to know where you come from to know where you're going and how to stop it from being repeated. In addition to saying that, I want to say that now more than ever, you have got to get out and exercise your right to vote, not just for president, but for assemblymen, congressmen, senators, governors, all of those people that have the right to legislate in this country on your behalf. We are all of us are in a crisis. We are all Americans. But right now, particularly Black people are screaming, yelling, getting shot at with rubber bullets, being beat with batons, gassed through protests, peaceful or otherwise. But none of that, none of those actions can kill our fighting spirit. And in addition to that, let's not forget that we've lost over 100,000 people to COVID-19, which is why we're in quarantine and sheltering in place in the first place. And I'm sure that that alone has led to people wanting to just get out the house, just scream, yell, move, run, do something. And it's brought everyone in America to their breaking point. So like everyone else, I've lost sleep over this. I've woken up in the morning and gone to sleep at night with a pit knot in my stomach. Okay. And I can't protest because nobody is practicing social distancing. And I can't protest for that reason because I'm caretaker for my mom. And my priority in this lifetime, first and foremost, is to protect my family and who I'm sheltering with. But I still have a voice. And although I may be shut in and I may be shut down, my voice is not. So with that, I beg you all to take the power that you have within your First Amendment right and by any means necessary, get out and vote. Speak so loud with a ballot that hopefully it will silence the prejudice and the injustice and the inequality that we are all experiencing, but particularly my brothers and sisters. And most of all, stay safe, stay sane, and practice self-care. And check in on those of you that you feel are strong, those friends that you know are strong, that can hold it together no matter what, family members too, because at the end of the day, we shall overcome all of this in time too. So I'm going to get off my soapbox right now, and we're going to go ahead and get on with the show. But I would be remiss in not doing the Curvy Critic today without acknowledging what is going on in our world, because it's important, and it's even more important for me as a Black woman in America to speak up and speak out. All right, so let me hop on over to the chat room. Hello, Brandon. Hello, Marlon Wallace. Hello, Michael B. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in today. I appreciate you, I love you. And thank you for standing in solidarity with me over at Black Hollywood Live. So getting on with the show, baby. All right, so I spoke a few weeks ago, I talked about the fact that I sat down with Michelle Phillips and Allison Elwood, the director of Laurel Canyon, and Chris Hillman and Johnny Eccles. And Laurel Canyon is a documentary that is showing on Epix right now. It's showing on Epix right now. The first part of it showed last week, and the second part is showing today, probably as I'm speaking to you, but you can always go over to Epix and check it out. And if you don't have a subscription to Epix, you can always get one for free. And honey, I'm all about it. If it's free, it's me. So there's that. But I sat down and I did a compilation of these interviews because each one of them individually was 5 minutes long and I didn't want to tie y'all up like that. So I did a little compilation of my interview with Allison, Chris Hillman, and Johnny Eccles. You can find the full written interview of Laurel Canyon and how I felt about the documentary over at thecurvyfilmcritic.com. But right now, take a look and a listen to the interview with the director and some of the subjects of Laurel Canyon.
I think that this docuseries is helping to keep this particular generation of music alive. And why do you think that's important in the big scheme of things, to keep various different generations of music alive, especially the 60s?
Well, you know, it's funny. During this COVID era, and you have all these kids doing Zoom things, a CSN song was done in Italy with 30 people singing, and it's just beautiful. So I think that the music is there and still speaks to people. And I think that, you know, hopefully the series will open up, people will learn more about the artists who made the music. I think the music is more known than the artists perhaps now. And to understand that all of this creativity happened in this one little space and time that that just exploded with creativity. And to know that that possibility exists, I think is critical for humanity.
Absolutely. I know you said you had problems with the music, but did you have any issues with the archival footage? Because there was a lot of it and some great things that I'd never seen before.
I mean, it was a very deep dive we did. We had amazing researchers working on it. And up until the very end, footage was coming in that we hadn't seen, and we're scrambling trying to figure out how to incorporate it. You know, it was just a matter of finding the material that suited the story the best. And also we shot quite a bit of things. Our DP, Sam Painter, we wanted to shoot a lot in Super 8. So you weren't necessarily sure whether it was of the time or contemporaneously photographed. And we always knew from the very beginning, we didn't want any of the artists on camera contemporaneously. Only Henry Delton and Reet Wild, the photographers or documentarians, would be on camera everyone else was going to be audio only, because we wanted it to be experiential and immersive and not take you out by looking at someone on camera taking you out of that moment.
So we lost Little Richard this past week. And I know it, through watching the docuseries, that quite a few of you spoke about him and how much he meant to you guys when you were first starting. Do you have any fond memories of Little Richard from that time?
Well, Little Richard's band was booked into Ciro's, where we worked, and they were coming in right after us. And I loved him. I mean, I bought his records in 1956.
Wow.
Singles, you know, and I just loved him. So I went down to see him with the drummer from the Byrds, Michael Clark, and that was when his lead guitar player was Jimi Hendrix. And on the other end of the stage, Carla, was Jimi Hendrix. No, and he had on a band outfit. They all had band outfits on. And Richard would come out with a crown on and a cape and be brought out and a la James Brown. Just beautiful.
Thank you so much for that. I mean, I get that feeling. There's such a, even though we're not in person, there's such a warmth and beautiful spirit about you that's coming off of the screen. So I appreciate that, and I thank you for that. But having said that, we're living in a time now where we don't know what the musical industry is going to look like. You know, those days of Laurel Canyon, I think that's literally something that we look back on it fondly now, but it's going to be even more fondly looked at in the future. How do you see the music industry, the touring industry, recording sessions moving forward out of this?
Everything is an upheaval, so I don't know. I don't know what will come out of this. Something will come out of it, but the touring and the one thing good is happening is the technology is such that people can actually put out a first-class record from something that they did in their bedrooms. So that's amazing, you know. I think the lady that won all those Grammys was able to do that.
Billie Eilish.
So that's amazing. But as far as live music and touring, it's kind of in flux right now. None of us know what's going to happen. And they're going to have to change all of these parameters around, you know, because promoters are not going to just flip the bill anymore and put everything up on spec. They're going to need some input and a little bit of cash from other areas and from the record company, so it may bring people back together and form a new music industry. I hope so.
I hope so too. Thank you so much for your input. I really appreciate you taking time to talk to me today, Johnny. This was lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Miss Kirby Critic. I love that.
I love it too. Thank you.
Thank you.
I love that Johnny Echols was all about the Kirby Critic. When I first started the interview, he was like, I love that. And then when he said it at the end, I was like, this is cool. This is how I'm going to end the interview. But I want to thank Allison Elwood, Chris Hillman, and Johnny Echols for taking time to talk to me about Laurel Canyon. And that's not all we got happening on Laurel Canyon. Fortunately, I was able to speak to those three people on camera, but Michelle Phillips, I had to do as an audio interview, but that doesn't make it any less enjoyable. If you're not familiar with Michelle Phillips, every time you turn on your TV set and you hear that song California Dreamin', you know that song that goes, all the leaves are brown and the skies are gray. That song right there, that's California Dreamin'. And that was sung by the Mamas and the Papas. And Michelle Phillips was an original member of that group. So I sat down and I talked to her about the magical musicianship of Laurel Canyon and some fond memories that she had of Mama Cass Elliott as well. So take a look and a listen to Michelle Phillips from the Mamas and the Papas talking about Laurel Canyon.
Hi, Carla.
Hi, Michelle. You know, in watching Laurel Canyon, I don't know why I thought the Mamas and Papas were together more than 2 years. I don't know if it's because you all's music has lived so much further beyond that. Wow, it was only 2 years? That's amazing.
We would write, record, tour, and come home and start over again. But it was great because we never did any of that bus stuff. We went straight to the Learjet.
That's hilarious.
I could never have done it. Well, the Journeymen, the group that John was in before, did the southern lap of the Hoot Nanny tour in a bus, and I accompanied them for a part of it, but I couldn't stand it, you know.
It's really noisy. You can't hear. You can't sleep. I used to be a background vocalist, and I toured with Tracy Chapman.
Great.
Being on that bus, it was a lot. Like, it's giving me agita just thinking about it.
Yeah, and we always were living very high on the hog. I mean, we never made any money touring, but that's how you sold records back then. You know, we were very self-contained. You know, I mean, the band flew commercial, and we flew in a private jet. It was fabulous.
I think it was you that said that you guys were hippies, but you eventually became the establishment when you moved out of Laurel Canyon into, like, Beverly Hills or Bel Air or someplace.
Bel Air, yeah. John and I bought a house out in Bel Air Road. We went from being hippies to being really rich hippies, and yeah, basically became the establishment.
That's hysterical. Would you say that the Mamas and the Papas were aspiring to artistry as opposed to aspiring to success, or vice versa?
Oh, we were just grabbing whatever we could get. It was all very new for us. You know, when we were a trio, it was me and John and Denny before Cass joined us. We were singing folk music, but then John started writing his own material. I eventually became a member of the New Journeymen, and then we met Cass through Denny. We got her to join the group, and that's when we heard Mr. Tambourine Man by the Byrds on the radio, and we said, oh my God, we got to get to California.
Yeah, I came here from the Midwest, and it's a completely different situation. I don't ever want to go live in snow and cold and ice ever again for the rest of my life. It's a situation.
Well, I can't tell you how many times, hundreds of people have said to me, you know, I used to live in Cleveland, and I heard California Dreamin', and I packed up my VW bus, and I drove to California, and I never looked back.
I overstand that sentiment 1,000,000,000%. Speaking of California dreaming, what are you California dreaming about post-quarantine?
I just want to go back to my favorite restaurant and hang with all my waiters. Those are my closest friends. I live alone now, so I don't cook anymore. I used to cook all the time, but cooking for one person is not very much fun. So I go out. I'm so used to going out and sharing lunches and dinners with my friends, and that's what I want to do. I want to be able to socialize again.
Yeah, I think we all are feeling that. You were mentioning Cass a little earlier. What is your fondest memory of her?
She made me laugh so much. She was such a funny woman. I remember once we were doing a song that John wrote called Words of Love.
Uh-huh.
She's out in the studio with this interviewer, and John and Lou Adler are in the booth. They say, Cass, can we get a vocal from you now? And she say, you know, I'm busy. And so she would talk a little longer to the interviewer, and they'd say, Cass, do you mind? Just give us a vocal, okay? One vocal, and then you can get back to your interview. And she says, oh, for God's sakes. And John says, Cass, just pick up the mic and stand up on the piano. She got up, crawled up on the piano, got up on top. She says, okay, roll it. And she did Words of Love in one take all the way through. And she says, got it? We're just all flabbergasted. She did this beautiful take. Then at the end of it, she dropped the mic. And she said, did you get it? They said, yes, Cass, we got it. You were great. Go back to your interview now.
That's amazing.
And I remember when we were playing Carnegie Hall, she, of course, sang the lead on Dream a Little Dream. And for some reason, she had never done this before, went down to the apron of the stage, and she sat down with her legs dangling over the side of the apron of the stage, and she sang Dream a Little Dream of Me. I swear, it made me cry.
Mm.
It was so beautiful. That was written by a friend of ours who lived in Mexico City named Fabian Andres. He wrote it with two other people. My dad called me to tell me that Fabian had been in an accident in Mexico. He walked into an elevator, and the elevator wasn't there, and he fell down the shaft.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
I know. We just started singing Dream a Little Dream. John said, Cass, come and sing this. And it was a song that was just tailor-made for her.
That is such a wonderful story. I thank you so much. I could talk to you all day. I'm so fascinated. I'm just completely fascinated. I did want to round it out with one last...
I'm a real chatterbox.
I am too, so we got that in common.
Well,
with shows like American Idol and The Voice on and them doing these different innovative things with vocals and artists, what do you think made the magic musical chemistry work for the Mamas and the Papas back in the day?
Blend. Just blend. That was one of the hardest things to get Cass to do because she was so used to singing up front. Everything was her, you know. When she was in the Big Three, she was the voice. And so she could sing at the top of her lungs, you know. She was a belt. When she started to sing with me, she had to learn how to control her voice because I had a very kind of lilting soprano, and Denny was just about the best tenor in the business, and John was a fantastic vocal arranger. We just had this sound that came out when we fine-tuned the tone of our voices. We could almost hear a fifth voice when we sang together.
Wow.
Correctly.
You guys were a great group. You broke all kinds of records. You were the first group, I believe, that was a gender mix.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I really enjoyed and loved about you, Cass, Denny, and John. I can hear in your voice that they were very dear and they hold very special memories for you, and I'm so grateful that you shared them with me.
Well, you're welcome, Carla. Thank you for listening to me.
Of course, that's my job.
Thank you, Michelle Phillips. I literally could have talked to her all day. She was so lovely and had so many stories to tell, and I could have just sat and listened to every single one of them for hours at a time. So again, you guys, you can find the docuseries Laurel Canyon on Epix streaming right now. It's in two parts. The other part has already aired. You can catch the second and final part tonight at some time after the Curvy Critic with Carla Renata. And I just want to address this too. So I realized I have the same outfit on I had on last week. It has stars and stripes, but I was wearing it because I was feeling very patriotic, so to speak. So I got on my stars and stripes to support my people in the struggle, Ungawa. So having said that, let's move right on to the next one. So this one I feel is a very inspiring piece. This docuseries is called Dear ... and it will be streaming on Apple TV beginning June 5th. It is executive produced by RJ Cutler, and it basically deals with these celebrities, people like Spike Lee, Oprah Winfrey, Lin-Manuel Miranda, and even Big Bird. And it takes what would normally be a biography of them, meshes it with letters from three different people that were fans whose lives were transformed by knowing that these people and their journey existed. So I sat down with RJ Cutler to talk to him about that docuseries to see what he had to say. And I want to share that with you guys. So take a listen. Take a look and a listen to RJ Cutler talking about Dear ...
Let me tell you something, RJ Cutler. When I saw the trailer, I busted out in tears. And I thought, this is not good. How am I going to make it through the series? And then I start watching the whole entire series and I cried for every single solitary one. How did you decide upon those particular letters and those particular subjects to mesh with the biography element of the series?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that. It really is an emotional series. And I think that's because it's tapping into something very deep, which is that all of our lives have been touched by individual people doing in specific things, one event, one moment, one gesture, one book you've read, one piece of art you've experienced. And we respond to that. We see it in action. And what's so surprising about the series is you would think that Oprah Winfrey, Lin Miranda, Stevie Wonder, Spike Lee, that they've seen it before. They've heard it before. They've been told so many times how beautiful their work is, how meaningful their work is. And something inside us also recognizes as truthful that that doesn't make it any less moving, any less significant to them when that one-on-one connection is made. And when somebody says to them, here is what your work did for me, thank you. And it's very, very powerful. So with that kind of guiding understanding of what we were working with, finding the subjects, finding the letter writers was, while not an easy process, followed suit. We were looking for people who reflected different moments in the subjects' lives. So we wanted someone who had been touched by Oprah's early career, her middle year career, her later career, the school she began, different things like that. With Lynn Miranda, for instance, it was important to find somebody who had been affected by his work, by In the Heights, who had been affected by Hamilton, but also who had been inspired by his activism and the general message that he's bringing to the world. And with each of our, what we call icons, with each of our subjects, it was important to find letter writers who reflected on that. And then, of course, letter writers who had beautiful stories to tell. And that's how we did it. And it really, there's so many moving parts to this, but when it comes together, as you've seen, it's really quite something. And we're very proud of it.
And, you know, you mentioned that you got a lot of icons, but then you got this one icon that is not human. You got Big Bird.
The best of them all. Big Bird.
I even cried at the Big Bird one. I'm like, what is happening? My mother was watching it with me, and she was like, what is wrong with you? Why are you crying? And I said, because I'm so touched. I'm so incredibly touched. So why did you decide to infiltrate Big Bird? Because Big Bird is not human, but Big Bird is an icon.
He is an icon, and he's somebody who has touched so many lives. And listen, our guiding light is one person can change the world. One bird can change the world too. And that's what you see in the Big Bird episode. Simple gestures, kind words, a lesson taught. These can be shockingly impactful. There's an episode with Misty Copeland where she tells the story of how, as a young girl, this is the prima ballerina, Misty Copeland. She tells the story about how, as a young girl, her family didn't know where their next meal was coming from. They were living in a motel, and there was a local boys and girls club, and she went over there because she had heard that they were giving ballet lessons, dance lessons. She had never danced before, but she knew she enjoyed dancing at home. And she went, and this teacher who had decided to give free lessons at the local boys and girls club recognized in her this extraordinary gift, that she was a prodigy, and encouraged her to dance and gave her a scholarship to dance school. And what if that teacher had not shown up, that been there that day? What if she hadn't volunteered that day? What if Misty had something else she had to do? These little miracles change the world.
Well, thank you for bringing those little miracles into my life, into the lives of everyone that's gonna watch it on Apple TV. I thank you so much for your time today, and I appreciate you.
Thanks so much, likewise.
Bye now. Hey, let me tell y'all something. Like I said to RJ Cutler, when I watched the trailer for this, I cried. And then I watched the entire series. I think it was like maybe 8 or 9 episodes. And I boohooed through every single solitary one, because each person that they highlighted in each episode resonated with me so very much. So thank you to Apple TV for allowing me to talk to RJ Cutler. Again, dear
.. will be streaming on Apple TV on June 5th. Now, last but not least, I love me some Handmaid's Tale, and I love me some Elizabeth Moss. I would watch Elizabeth Moss play anything under the sun because she's that fierce. And so is her co-star, Michael Stuhlbarg. So Michael and Elizabeth have a new film coming out that is produced by Neon, and it's called Shirley. It's based on a real life person, and they play this couple that just gave me all the feels. But I don't want to ruin the interview for you talking about it ahead of time. So I'll let you listen to the interview, and then I'll tell you more about Shirley after this. So take a look and a listen to Elizabeth Moss and Michael Stuhlbarg talking about Shirley. What's up, you guys? I'm so excited to talk to you. Yay.
You as well. Nice to see you.
Oh, my goodness. Nice to see you. It's nice to be seen. you know what I'm saying? This film gave me life because it had that Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf vibe happening. And y'all were giving me Burton and Taylor all day long. I just have to tell you that. I was all about that right there. But what I want to know is their relationship seemed to be so toxic. And between Stanley and Shirley. And I just wonder if you ever had somebody, and I don't call it toxic, I call it an emotional vampire. So I just wanted to know if you ever had someone in your life that was an emotional vampire and how you chose to deal with that person. Silence of it all.
Wow. I know, the loaded silence. 100% I have. Absolutely. To be totally candid, what happens is you leave them eventually. but I don't know if I feel like that about Shirley and Stanley is the thing. I know what you're saying, and it's incredibly toxic, and I know that I couldn't sign up for that kind of relationship or marriage. It wouldn't be my choice. But I think in a way there was something very honest and modern about what they were doing. And I do think from all of our research, one of the things that we learned and held on to was that they really loved each other and they really respected each other and respected each other's work. And they may have gotten into some games and some things that were manipulative and not healthy, but they really did have this underlying love for each other. Yeah. Again, not for me necessarily, their marriage, but
what about I think you, Michael? They did kind of thrill in pushing each other's buttons. And I think it was very much a part of who they were individually and also as a couple. I think, as Elizabeth, you mentioned earlier today, Shirley never wanted to be bored. She was she was always looking for something to either provoke herself or to be provoked. And I think Stanley allowed, he knew that about her, and he also was good at getting her goat and to get her, particularly in the instance of this film, shaking the dust off of her because she found herself in such a low place at the beginning, and to be able to pick her up, dust her off, and point her in the direction of perhaps something that would inspire her to go back to what it was she did so well, and back to her gifts as a writer. Mm-hmm. So they needed each other desperately in that. And then perhaps they were vampires together, but they didn't want to be anywhere else, I don't think.
I love that answer to that. And so I know that this film is going to be put in drive-ins, which is a new thing, you know, that we're in quarantine and staying at home and shut in, lockdown, whatever you want to call it. Have y'all ever been to a drive-in theater? And when was the last time you recall going to one?
I did go, but I can't remember why or where it was. But I do remember when I was very young going. It was still, because was not alive in the time of the drive-ins. It was still a retro idea. It must have been in LA somewhere, and I don't remember what the movie was.
It was a part of my growing up. I grew up in Southern California, so there were drive-ins all over the place where I grew up in Long Beach, California. In fact, my very first movie was a drive-in movie. I think I was in the back of my family's station wagon seeing, I think it was Love Story.
Oh, no.
I'm dating myself here, but I must have been 4 years old or 5 years old or something like that. But yeah, it was, I loved drive-ins too. And I think that this is going to be shown in drive-ins. So it'll be kind of fun to sort of bring back this kind of retro thing in a really fun way.
I love that. And I love both of y'all. I love your work so much. I was so excited to be able to speak to both of you and talk to you. And so that's my time. And thank you so much. Good luck with the film. Good luck with everything else that you have coming up. And I'll be right here rooting for you.
Thank you. Back at you.
Thank you so much.
Let me tell y'all something. Me talking to Elizabeth Moss is like a bucket list situation for me. Me talking to Michelle Phillips was a bucket list situation for me. Me talking to RJ Cutler was a bucket list situation for me. So I was so excited to have all of those people in one show and share them with you. Again, you guys, Shirley is this film that is crazy as hell. It's based on a real life horror writer named Shirley Jackson and her professor husband, Stanley Hyman. And they take in this new couple and shenanigans ensue. They find themselves inside a real psychodrama, very similar to what Shirley Jackson would have written herself. The film premiered, had its world premiere at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year, and it won the U.S. Dramatic Special Jury Prize for Auteur Filmmaking. So I just wanted to get that out there and make sure that I acknowledge that, because it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful film. It's directed by Josephine Decker, and the screenplay is by Sarah Gubbins. You guys, it is a crazy film. It's weird, weird, weird. It's crazy good cinema. And the performances in it make it even that more stellar. So again, Shirley premieres this week, June 5th, courtesy of Neon. Now, I know last week when I signed off, I had said that I was going to have my good girlfriend LaShawn's here and her daughter, Celia Rose, who is starring in Jagged Little Pill on Broadway. But in light of recent events, Celia is out there protesting and exercising her First Amendment rights, and I am not mad at her, but we probably will have them here next week. In addition to that, I will also have an interview with my girl, Bryce Dallas Howard, who is making her directorial debut as a director for a documentary, again, for Apple TV called Dads. So you guys, I thank you so much for hanging in there with me today. And I hope I was able to enlighten you or inspire you or entertain you or make you smile for just a little bit of time today in spite of everything that's going on. If you're going out there to protest, please make sure that you're staying safe and sane. Don't wear any jewelry. Make sure that everything is covered up. Have some ID on you. Take some water. Have a face mask and do it with safety. Do it with safety while exercising your rights. In the meantime, stay safe, stay sane. I will see you next week, and love, peace, and hair grease, y'all. Until the next time, bye.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.